get his name, Fred Gaskin. Afternoon Delight, Village Vice, I'm about to see the light. Is half three hearts. The baseball game is about to start. Nope, there's a 6-hour rain delay. Albernator, birds and gators. Panama Canal has got a savior. Zach hates Matt, Big Ben Brad. I just took you to Pound Town with a slap.
Couldn't find the daggone button to click off the click off the graphic. Welcome everybody. Welcome into the Barncast Live Sunday night edition. It's Kyle Rush, Daryl Daprich, Christian. How do you say your last name, Christian?
Rao. I like to tell Rao. People it's like Owen Wilson saying wow, but with an R in front of it.
Wow.
Perfect. I was gonna say raw. It kind of has a raw to it, but I'll take Rao. I'm good with that.
There you go.
Guys, y'all, welcome in. We have a fun conversation tonight, and you have to understand like what's going on right now. We know that it's super dead. Like, it's going to be dead for a while as far as recruiting goes. You got, 3 weeks until, or 2.5 weeks until media days and stuff like that. So I thought it'd be fun tonight, and there's a reason behind it, that we'd have a little Gus Malzahn discussion. Recently, I guess over the past weekend, he posted a picture and he was wearing his Auburn football Under Armour t-shirt from back whenever he was a coach here. And it just sparked a lot of conversation in a lot of different directions. Daph was in some of the group texts I was in. Christian, I'm not sure if you're privy to that, but I don't know the 100% the direction to go with this, other than, I guess, what's our overall feelings on Gus. I've been hearing a lot of people say, man, I really hope he is part of the staff, you know, it's even if it's in a consultant role. I've heard people say the complete opposite. I've heard people that wish he was back. I've heard listen to people that say that he's still glad that, you know, they made that decision. Where do you guys land as far as the Gus Malzahn and Auburn deal as a whole?
Well, I'm going to start out with the most famous saying that I can use about two things being true at once. So let me say this. It was time for him to go. There's no doubt about that. I think it had run its course, but that still doesn't mean that we could look back on some of it and appreciate it more. See, guys, as you get older in life, and you guys know this, sometimes as you get further away from an event, you romanticize it a little bit more. It becomes a little more special, or you kind of realize maybe what you had, or maybe it wasn't so bad. What I don't get is there's a faction of the fan base that wants to absolutely get triggered because he's shown with a picture at the lake on the 4th of July, probably the same lake house he had when he was here that he still owns.
Yep, same one.
With an Auburn t-shirt. Well, why should that bother anybody? Wouldn't we rather somebody embrace being an Auburn man, being excited to be affiliated with Auburn? You know, the alternative is a clown like Harsin. You never heard Gus Malzahn badmouth Auburn, troll Auburn, say anything negative. You got Harsin. Bowden disappeared. Terry Bowden, you never heard from him. He said negative things about Auburn. Harsin trolled Auburn on Twitter. He's obsessed with them like a little fangirl, right? Yeah. The difference between Malzahn and Harsin is class and an ass.
Bang.
That's the bottom line. And so you got one. So why should we get so fired up about that. And we'll go into the record and all that other stuff, his football legacy. But for people to get – he's a good man.
Yeah.
That did the very best for Auburn, and then he left, and he hasn't done anything to tarnish his legacy.
Christian, I want to ask you this. Obviously, you haven't been following Auburn like the longest of, you know, the guys on the show right now. So do you think though that the past 5 years sort of skew might be the wrong term, but like, do you think the past 5 years make it to where there's a lot more, oh man, I wish we had that back, or oh man, we're, you know, we, that was a mistake getting, you know, getting rid of Gus. Do you think that we let sometimes maybe the past 5 years change the way we feel about that whole situation, and was it or was it not the right time to move forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think Dap just said the right way. You can romanticize about things that happened in the past. It's a lot easier to do that now when you see what happened after that. I mean, I think it's fair to make the assessment that the grass isn't always greener after you do move on from Gus, even if you do believe it's the right time, because there was not a single season he had a losing season. And then you moved to Harsin and you moved to Freeze, and that obviously wasn't the case the entire time. So, I mean, I think there are some moments where you look back and you're like, man, it would be nice to see what that could have been for maybe another 1 year, another 2 years. But to have him back, even if it's just in a smaller role, and remember about 2 months ago, he came to practice and we heard what Coach Dolich had to say about him, where he had no ego about it, all positive things. I think it's a good thing. So as you mentioned, that's not my strong point when it comes to Auburn conversation because of how far back that goes. I start about the last 5-6 years in my tenure of covering it the way that I've covered it or viewed it. But from what I know and from what I've seen just as a football fan at that time, he had successful times at Auburn. Yeah, it was, I agree with Daryl that it was time to move on. It was time to run that course. But also, he was the offensive coordinator when they won the national championship. And that quarterback that when he was, this is going to be really hyperbole, but let's start strong. That quarterback during that offensive coordinator run in 2010, well, the closest to that is what's happening right now. So if he's going to be at practices at all, I can only see that being good things.
Dab, do you think that's actually going to happen?
Do you think he'll be at practice?
Do you think he'll actually be involved at all? And would you like him to be?
Yeah, I do, in a small consultant shadowy role.
Yeah.
MI6, baby, Bond. I think it will, and here's why. Who better knows what kind of coach is across the other sidelines that you would trust into your inner circle than that of a rival? Just 2 years ago, UCF and USF were getting at each other pretty good and going for the same recruits, and they are natural rivals. And I get it. One moved into the Big 12, the other, but still, that's a rivalry from a couple years ago. So if Golish respects Gus's opinion and his football acumen from somebody who was, you know, fighting for him with him against him for the same recruits and was across that sidelines, I think that there's something to that. And I will also say this: there's never been a greater example of a coach that you knew had hit his ceiling and it was time to go. He was bumping his head on the ceiling. It had run, like we said, run its course. But that still doesn't. You make a great point, Kyle, that we kind of look at the Gus years a lot more favorably because we've been through the wilderness right now.
Yeah.
That doesn't take away the fact that we hit our ceiling and Auburn needed to go somewhere else to get to the next level.
Yeah.
But wouldn't we, right now, there's a lot of people pining and yearning for the next level. And let's just throw out facts. This is an opinion. Christian mentioned it. Never had a losing season. Went to a bowl game every year. Struggled with bowl games, but we're still struggling with bowl games.
Yeah.
Lost a national championship within the last 30 seconds. Lost playing in the national championship in the college football playoff because Kerryon Johnson couldn't hold the football because he had a bum shoulder and had to play Georgia twice. So that's a pretty good run. Now, there were some frustrations. There was the Cox cat and not developing a high school quarterback. You know, he had a lot of success. Offensive line recruiting was abysmal. And he had success when he could go get a quarterback and pluck him from the quarterback tree and bring him in already seasoned. The Jeremy Johnsons and the Sean Whites and some of those guys did not pan out, but the Jarrett Stidhams, Nick Marshalls, Cam Coleman's did. So he was a ready-made. That's why, Christian, you make a great point. He would have been, Byron Brown would have been his, a Christmas stocking present for him. It's exactly the kind of quarterback that he would have gotten and flourished with.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. That would have been an interesting matchup there. I want to ask you this. What do you say to the people? Do you think the people that would say, and I've heard this, I don't know that I want anything to do with the Gus Malzahn offense anymore, ever again. Do you think that's fair? Like, in other words, I don't know that I'm crazy about his input. Like, I'm not crazy about having him in the mix. Do you think that's justifiable, or is that – because, I mean, let's just be honest. Other than maybe, what, two seasons, the offense – is what kept Auburn from reaching the peaks of college football while Gus was here. What do you say to those people that have that train of thought? Welcome, Zach.
Hey, guys.
Hey, man. I'll let Gus Christian take this one.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say I don't think you're going to get that. I think you might get some just like little shades of just tips and getting notes if he does appear at practice, but Golish seems to be very dedicated to his scheme. We're seeing it with recruiting. We're seeing how he answers at the transfer portal already this early. Now, a lot of it is with, you know, South Florida transfer portal players, but even the ones that are outside of his realm, it seems like it's already looking towards that identity. And they continue talking about that buzzword with identity. So I don't think even if he did show up, I don't think it'd be a huge influence. I think the actual just experience of how he handled Auburn, how he's positive about Auburn, how he wants to be around Auburn, how he's moving back to Auburn, will be the bigger influence, I think.
Kyle, he's very good at minute details, analytical things, the small things, very OCD, very organized. Where he struggled with is on the fly stuff. So if Golish can use him just to go, hey, look at this scheme that this defense is running and find me something that's really, really, really detailed or minute that we can expose, that's where an analytical mind could help. But when the game started going and people started catching on, he struggled adjusting. And that's where Golish will stay true to his scheme, to his personnel, to his feel on how the game's going.
And I just think when you think about like running identities and offenses that have really been, okay, this downhill running attack in the SEC, like you look at, you know, some of the most prolific rushers in the conference since, you know, the start of the Gus Malzahn era. And it's, I mean, he did it with dudes that weren't, you know, Kerryon Johnson. Like, I mean, he made Peyton Barber and Cameron Artis Payne, who were solid college backs, but I mean, he made them look like some of the best and most productive backs in the conference. I don't know how conversations with him and having him around translates to what that does for Auburn, but I like that where y'all are headed with this. Like, I think this is the fact that this is even like a potential option and a discussion, I think says so much about Golish not just coming in here saying like, yeah, I got it. I don't need help from anybody. I know what I'm going to do, but actually like, having an open conversation with anybody that he could potentially learn from. I think that's the macro takeaway from the conversation y'all been having.
We see so many times where SEC coaches are, or like coaches that get to the SEC, that's the pinnacle. They make it and they're like, we made it here. That's great. Let me just coast it out. They get my contract and put the check mark there. But Golish reaching out and trying to, you know, develop and build and reach out to other coaches who've had somewhat success at Auburn does not give me that same feeling towards Golish compared to what we've seen from, you know, Billy Napier's and Hugh Freeze making it back, you know, the second time around. Like, it seems different. And I think that helps my take as well.
What if it would have been, let me ask you this. Does it make it, and then we got a super chat I want to get to. Does it make it easier for Golish to accept Gus Malzahn in with open arms because he wasn't like a Nick Saban that retired at Auburn? And then everybody's like pointing back to, man, I wish, you know, that guy got it done, or this, that, and, you know, that kind of thing. Is it easier that maybe, you know, he struggled a little bit, especially towards the end, and then you've had this era of, you know, futility, then you can kind of bring him back in, and it's not like, it's not a huge threat, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, do you think that makes it easier?
I'm about to blow this up right now. There's going to be some people in this chat that are of a certain age are going to be very upset with what I'm about to say, but it better not be, because that was the problem with Auburn for years with Dye. And I love Pat Dye, but Terry Bowden did it. He embraced him and had him in the locker room after, and just was like, you know, I'm going to lean on him. I don't want him to go anywhere. He was around the complex. He was around the practice field. He interjected his opinion for a very, very long time, even when Gus was there. So we can't have that happen again. So Golish must not feel threatened.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? This isn't going to be a Dye situation where he's just not going to be asked. The legacy is so strong that no one wants to hurt his feelings. I mean, you guys know it, the whole Kevin Steele thing, Dye was involved in that. So that can't happen. That's where Auburn gets that reputation. That cannot happen.
I want to read this, get this super chat from Reverend Barnbooster. He said, if Auburn had made the playoffs in 17 and 19, we should have. I agree on the 17. I don't know about the 19. I think Gus wouldn't have been fired because he would have had AU back to high-level postseason like he did in 2013. Set high expectations, meet high expectations. I mean, I agree. I guess I agree with that. I don't know that I would say the 2019 team should have been in the playoffs or was particularly that good outside of defense, which was probably one of the most – that's one of the more frustrating things, I think – of the Gus Malzahn era for me was how awesome that defense was and how it was just pretty much wasted, which was kind of a theme for many years.
Yeah, it's bled into this era too.
Jacob J says, side note, SEC Network is currently showcasing Auburn spring football. I love the selection of former Tigers on staff. Hope y'all had a great fourth. Did y'all see this?
I saw, like, today was our Auburn takeover thing or whatever, but I didn't see what all was on there.
Gosh, not much football. If you had to take an – if you had an Auburn takeover right now and you could only use, like, the last 5 years, what are your top moments that you put on?
Oh, that's fun. A&M.
Twice.
Baylor last year.
He doesn't have to. I guess it doesn't necessarily have to be football, but I mean,
probably a bunch of Koivin.
Yeah, but you can't hardly.
Can you put that on TV? Saying, like, do they have you're that saying ready? Not football. Okay.
It doesn't necessarily have to. I mean, it's going to be a lot of basketball. And then if you went to football, you're right. You got Cadillac's game as a head coach, A&M, multiple overtimes, but I think that's pretty much it.
Baylor. That's it. I mean, that's
it. That, yeah. Maybe.
That's if you want to put football in there.
If you really want to put another football game in there.
I mean,
I tell you what,
I felt very good about that Baylor game last year. This year.
I'm sorry, Christian. Say that again.
I'm just saying, I felt really good about that after that Baylor game last year. I thought we were untouchable. So.
Oh, I know, dude.
Yeah, I was.
Fool's gold, right down.
Game one against Texas in baseball, that was electric.
That was electric.
Yep.
Also, the doubleheader, I don't know if you could really encapsulate that on a takeover, but the dub, like when Auburn won back to back to force the regional finale, that was crazy. You know, the Ryan Hetzler.
This Auburnator makes a great point. Unfortunately, and I hate to say it without having to take a Pepsid, there were a couple games in the Harsin era. That LSU game in Baton Rouge would be one if it's the last 5 years.
Ole Miss was a good
Ole Miss
one.
At home.
Ole Miss at home. Yeah. But other than that, it's lean.
War Dank Eagle says, Gus played for a natty with an NFL cornerback at quarterback. Just saying. You know what, Dan? You may have just stumbled upon something that could be a fantastic conversation. Why did we go away from that? Why did we stop trying to get cornerbacks to play quarterback
I don't know if that was like an intentional thing or what, but whenever – Gus got going, he tried, like, he recruited, like, pocket guys or, like, pocket guys that are somewhat athletic. And then Bo Nix, I mean, who was a five-star. But, like, when it was up to him fully, like, he went Sean White. He went Jeremy Johnson, who I don't think is as mobile as we think he is, despite Tyler them Queen. Putting him in, like, short yardage situation and doing that QB blast stuff. That was the weirdest thing. Or I was listening to y'all when I was putting my kid down talking about the Cox cat. I'm like, man, those two things. But, yeah, the whole when he recruited these guys, he didn't recruit these athletic quarterbacks. It's not who we pursued. And then he got, like, peer pressured by the fan base, and so then they added John Franklin III.
There you go. I was going to say it.
We got Nick Marshall 2.0. And then that Netflix documentary comes out, and it's like, oh.
This guy didn't even start.
He couldn't even start at the JUCO.
He still ran by me faster than any human being I'd ever seen at a football game. I was actually at the 45-yard line, second row, and we were playing some nobody directional school, and they put him in late, and he ran a quarterback draw or a read option, and I just looked down to get something out of my drink, and he was by me already. It was unbelievable.
When that happened, I'm like, the hype from this is going to be unbelievable.
You know, I think Sean White, to a certain degree, because of his off-the-field problems and his shoulder being broke, he was starting to evolve. He was making some plays. He was doing some things that year that he got hurt, and he played him against Georgia anyway. Remember, Auburn ran off six or seven in a row and was rolling. And White looked good with the quarterback read. We had Petway. I mean, that's where, Zach, one of the most underrated points you've ever made on this show, he made Petway, Peyton Barber, some of these guys that just had no business being great backs, really great backs. What would he have done with a Jarquez Hunter or a Jeremiah Cobb? You know, it's fun to think about.
What if what happens? This is a fun one. What happens if you go into the 2015 season with Lamar Jackson, who by all accounts we pretty much said no thanks on, instead of Jeremy Johnson? What does that rest of that career looks like if Gus just leaned into? And I would love to ask him this one day. Like, I would love to have the opportunity and say, look, put everything, no coach speak, no nothing. I want to know if you could go back in time, would you have gotten Lamar Jackson and stuck with that style, 2013, 2014 style offense, and just become the athletic QB epicenter of college football? What is that? What does the rest of that career look like if just that one, you could change that one moment in time?
Well, I mean, you'd rather have Tyler Queen than Lamar Jackson, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's not what you're saying, right?
No, that's exactly what I'm saying, actually.
I think the closest way that you could look at that, it's not Auburn, but it'd be UCF. Second year there, he had John Rhys Plumlee, who was like very dual threat, probably not in the same tier as where Lamar was, but definitely treated him as like the same Lamar at Louisville. That's probably what you would get, that type of production at Auburn, but with a much better weapons around him than you got from Plumlee. So that's my first thought from it.
Man, and you would transfer, you'd go from Lamar Jackson to, like, what was the kid that went to Georgia that we tried really hard to get, and then he went to Ohio? It's Justin Fields. Like,
yeah.
Now that
were we ever in it for Justin Fields?
Yeah, remember it was pretty tight. We tried really, really hard. He ended up obviously going to Georgia, but like maybe you got a chance at a guy like that. Like,
well, let's think about the Lamar Jackson timeline thing though, because he would have been
a true freshman. He would have been a true freshman in 2015.
Didn't he play against Auburn in that kickoff classic at the end?
He started
that game as a true freshman?
He didn't start, but he came in and he almost brought him back to win. Yep.
So I didn't think he started either. And then Brad Law pulled up on a Village Vice, pulled up the box score, and he talked about him. He did start. He came. They started off of like a wildcat.
They threw like him a toss sweep, and then he threw an interception. Yep. I think is what something like that happened.
Pass interception by Trey Matthews.
No, Trey Matthews. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so the timeline, though, would have been, it still would have been Jeremy Johnson starting the season.
Correct.
Maybe. But
it
like,
would have had to. Dude. The hype was unreal.
Jeremy Johnson had equity already from what he did the previous year in football games, Arkansas, where Lamar Jackson was a true freshman and never played a snap. Remember, Jeremy Johnson beat Arkansas because Marshall sat out the first half.
In the first half, right.
And had a phenomenal first half against an SEC opponent, not a directional school. I mean, he was flawless. So that was enough. And then when he came in games that year, he played well in mop-up duty. So that was enough to give him the start over a true freshman that never played a snap, Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, but do you think it's a lot easier to make a change after the Jacksonville State fiasco when you got a guy like Lamar Jackson?
Yes.
Back there that you've seen at least practice through a fall camp, you know, and maybe even a spring. I don't know exactly when he enrolled at Louisville, but I don't know, man. I always wonder what would have happened if you could change that one moment in time.
I have another what if that I think about fairly regularly. But first, let me address some propaganda here. Brad Lawson, I wish these guys would let me join the show sometime. He has the login.
Yeah.
He has the login.
He could come on right now.
I'm a little salty towards Brad because he just disappeared. I don't know where he went all week. I have no clue. He's tweeting about me today saying, can't wait to get back to the show tomorrow. I'm like, where have you been? And now he's pulling this. Y'all don't listen to this guy. Don't listen to this guy.
You can't trust Brad Law on a Sunday. You can on Monday through Friday.
Best Monday through Friday in the biz, for sure.
Sunday, a little sketchy at best.
Cam what was the other? Breaking a run,
oh,
as he would routinely do somehow against Vandy. Pulling and his leg just falls apart.
And that was when it took a turn. It shifted, really.
The whole Malzahn tenure after that was like, never was really quite the same again.
And that was 2016, and him and Kerryon, they shared carries that year.
Here's the problem I have.
That game was
year, right? Is that when we would like?
No, that was his. No, because he was a senior in 2017, wasn't he? Kerryon.
I guess you're right.
That was when that running it was lead. Nobody could, and then we played Baker Mayfield in the Sugar Bowl.
Well, don't say nobody. That's the thing. Like, if you look back at that run they made, okay, they did reel off some wins. Let me make sure I'm in the right year. 2016.
Correct.
But they beat teams like ran all over Louisiana Monroe, ran all over Mississippi State, ran all over Arkansas, ran all over Ole Miss, who was terrible at the time. And then Vanderbilt was when he got hurt.
And it was close.
You were never really doing anything, though, that I ever felt like was going to help you beat Georgia or Alabama, like regardless if Cam was healthy or not. Now, the Georgia game, maybe, because they weren't that great yet.
No, they sucked that year. Kirby was 6-6, and Sean White, Auburn, it was a three, four-point game, and if Sean White was healthy, he ran him out there with one shoulder.
Noodle arm the second half.
He couldn't. I mean, if he's healthy that game, Auburn, I'm sorry, Auburn boat races Georgia in Athens if he's healthy.
It was like call plays for an injured quarterback.
Right.
I mean, he's throwing an out route with a noodle arm, and of course it's going to be a pick six. That was crazy to me.
Somebody refresh my memory. Who was the backup?
The backup quarterback?
In 16. Was it Franklin?
It was freaking John Franklin.
Yeah, I would have rather let him run quarterback read against them.
Remember, John Franklin started the Vanderbilt game.
And they had to pull him because he was struggling.
He was so bad, and then they put in Sean, and he actually threw a touchdown.
Yep.
And then, but he was injured. Like, it was pretty clear. It was pretty clear. I'm just saying, like, we did a lot of things, though, that in that little hot run that they had in 2016 that I never really felt like were going to help you beat the better teams. Like, you got stomped by Clemson earlier in the year. You lost to Texas A&M. They beat you fairly bad by two scores. And then Alabama drummed you. I just don't think you were going to line up and run Cameron Petway all over Alabama. Like, I just – at that point in time, that's still when they were tough, like playing tough defense.
Yeah, I mean, that was like peak Saban era defense.
Yes.
Yeah. That's before DeBoer got there.
Somebody needs to correct – I'm not trying to be that, but it's just a pet peeve. Pull up Georgia's record in 2016, please.
They weren't good.
They weren't 9-4. Someone says they were 9-4 that year, not 6-6. No, they weren't, because I always go to that.
They're 8-5.
8-5?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
They were 7-5 in their bowl game, right?
Yeah, that's right. They were 7-5 and won their bowl game. And when they played Auburn, they were 6-5 because then they beat Georgia Tech and then they won their bowl game.
They lost to Georgia Tech.
Yeah. They did.
They lost to Georgia Tech
that year.
Yeah. Kirby Smart's lost to Georgia Tech?
28-27.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But they weren't good. I mean, they weren't good. They lost to Ole Miss, Tennessee, Vanderbilt. They lost to Vanderbilt that year.
Oh, 17-16. Another one point loss.
They lost to Florida. I remember that one was a big deal because they had like won.
Brad, where have you been?
Well, I stand corrected. I thought they were 7-6 that year, not 8-5. So there you go.
Brad, lock in. You're going to get to that on your computer in a second when it loads.
All right. Where were we?
I have a thought about Gus, if we want to go back to Gus for a minute.
Yeah.
Do you think this, any of you think this is important at all? But he was just named to the College Football Playoff Committee. Him being around in the area talking about maybe just certain behind the scenes and helping, you know, little small progressions for Auburn as a program to get to that pinnacle, if you will. Do you think that helps at all? Or is that
interesting or is it important?
I think it's interesting.
Yeah. That's a good
Everyone's playing checkers and Golish is playing chess. Hey, Gus, come on back, baby. Hang around the
facility.
Who else
is on the committee? Let's let them visit practice too.
Yeah, let me ask you about this tendency that I noticed Baylor has on defense, by the way. So, look, when he came out last year, if for nothing else, when Florida State beat Alabama and he said, feels like old times, how do you not embrace that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's other coaches didn't do that. Harsin would be saying something like, finally got some players to beat Alabama, didn't have them in Auburn. That's what that jackleg would have done.
Or told you so.
Yeah, while he was flexing with his hoodie and his sleeves off.
He looked jacked. I would have posted it too if I was him. Yeah.
That's what steroids does to you.
I don't think you can say this. But, Brad, he's not dead to us.
He's not. We love
for Milton. See if he shows up for Village Vice tomorrow or not.
Yeah. This is good, though, from Brad. Confident coaches aren't insecure about others being at practice. That's like a double entendre right there.
Mm-hmm. Because you remember
about it. Because of who we're talking about.
Well, and remember, when everyone wants to always talk about the standard and the demigod that is Saban, he brought Kiffin back when he was in the wilderness to come to practice and be an analyst. He did it with Sark after coming through his alcohol problems. He got Durkin to come and be an analyst. I mean, Saban always reached out and didn't allow past things to inhibit that. And that's coaches that are confident. Those are Russian assassins that do that. Let's go.
Nick Saban is Alex Golish, and Alex Golish is Nick Saban.
I love that no ego quote that we got from Golish a couple months ago when he did arrive at practice. I love that. He's just like, I have no ego. If they can help any which way to make us just one step better, like I'm paraphrasing the rest, but I was all about it. And I hope that we get more of that throughout this entire tenure of him.
He seems very comfortable in his own skin, both directions. No ego. And also, he doesn't have thin skin. It's like, whatever. I am who I am. Like it, don't. I'm not threatened by you, by what you say. I wasn't here when Alabama beat Auburn 5 times in a row. I'm going to let the media know that. And also, if I want to have a coach that had some success here, he can come too. I love that.
So, this is like a side quest that spun from this whole Gus Malzahn thing is who was the worst coach in the this past tenure? Was it Freeze or Harsin? And then some people were like, oh, you didn't live through Barfield.
I put Barfield in the group chat, but Barfield was better than both of them. I mean, he was. They won more games.
Yeah.
Barfield had a winning season.
They were just so different.
Yeah.
Like, they were like opposites of each other. Like, I actually think Harsin was a decent, like, scheme and coach guy. He just didn't have any players after all the Gus's terrible guys left. And then... Yeah. You had players and couldn't coach.
That is, they are like polar opposites.
And Barfield did have one of the best backfields of all time in Auburn history. I mean, he had James Brooks, William Andrews, and Joe Cribbs in the same freaking backfield and won 8 games. And I'm not blaming my guy Charlie Trotman. I'm just saying they won 8 games with those 3 running backs.
This is probably recency bias.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say Freeze was worse.
I think it's Harsin, and I don't even really think it's that close.
Me too.
To be completely honest. Just
Somebody made a point in the group chat at the end of the day, where is the program when both men left? Who left the program in shambles and who left them in a decent spot that they could win eight games?
Well, Freeze definitely left it in a better spot for sure.
And he inherited.
I do wonder how much of that was him and how much of that was just like the organization of
dropping money. Back. Do you guys feel, and again, this gets back to conversations we know that Hugh Freeze had with people privately about what that roster looked like when he inherited, making the comment that some of the guys wouldn't even play at Liberty. Harsin inherited a much better lineup from Gus Malzahn, a roster from Gus Malzahn than Freeze did.
Yeah, Bo Nixon's Tank.
Seth Williams and Anthony Schwartz.
I think Seth went. I
and Owen Pasco on defense.
Yeah. I think both
those
guys
better with the NFL. Who coached the worst with better talent? Who was the worst just on the field coach with better talent?
So that's it. If you compare Harsin's first year to Freeze when he had talent,
they both Harsin's went 6-7. They both went 6-7.
It's still though, like that.
They both
that's
went
part
six
of
and seven. They both lost a bowl game embarrassingly.
Do you remember when Harsin?
I think you're comparing different years to what I'm talking about. Like Freeze's first year where we thought he had a decent roster, which I guess.
Oh, I got you. I got you. Yeah. No,
versus
you're right.
Harsin's first year. I would say those rosters were comparable to each other. Harsin's roster might be a hair better than second year Freeze roster, but I think it's close.
I don't like throwing a lot of players under the bus, but do you remember when like the big coup or like the big thing for Harsin was that he got like all of the offensive linemen from the previous year to just come back? Like we didn't go get anybody in the portal or anything. We just were like, yes, we got Austin Troxel back and we got all these guys that were
Mick Broms.
Yeah. We got all those guys that were, got pushed around the year before.
Yeah.
We got them all back, baby. Just to
defend myself in the chat for a moment, do we think Freeze was a good recruiter or did he just pay them?
I think he was a good recruiter.
You do?
Because I think even when
this roster this year costs more than last year.
Yeah. And the pre NIL era, he still got some good athletes to come to. Good players come to Ole Miss. Now, was it illegal what he was doing? I don't know. I think something Zach and I have talked about on previous Locked On shows is interesting that did neither Freeze was in a different situation because it was a school that was a little bit lower level, although they're both group of fives. If you look at the fact that when we got Harsin, I thought there was going to be this mass exodus of good Boise State players that were going to follow him, and nobody came. Mm. And Liberty was kind of the same thing. I mean, there just wasn't, you know, and Boise State had better players, I would think. They were just a little bit more known, played in bigger bowl games. And
they had a wide receiver that got drafted.
And they had a linebacker that it would have, and nobody came. Nobody followed him. And now you look at like these things, look at the coach we have now, like 70% of the roster set up coming with you, baby. I think that is very, very telling.
That's telling.
Yeah.
You said the one part about him being able to recruit NIL, my take on it was, well, how can you determine that it was Freeze and then more of like the era that he was in and then like the staff? And of course,
I don't think you can talk about pre-NIL recruiting with Freeze.
You thought because he cheated, you think?
Well, I mean, didn't they get
everybody
they got hit with it? I don't think there's a think thing on this, right?
But I think you have to look at it just like the steroids era in baseball. If everyone was doing it and he still achieved success, then he still did something right.
A bunch of flips and just throwing bags at the wall and hoping they stick, are we considering that good recruiting or is that just having?
But everybody can do that.
Right. No, right. That's a curious
part. If you still end up with a top 10 class with everybody can do it.
With nothing to sell. but despair. turn this thing around. Look, we're splitting hairs, I think. Like, regardless, the last 5 years have been awful. And
terrible.
And it's been good for the Auburn and Gus Malzahn relationship. I think as a whole, I think it's created some appreciation and maybe the opportunity that there could be some sort of position that he could, you know, maybe utilize to help Auburn and help Golish in some capacity. What that looks like, I have no idea. It may be like what Dap said, where it's like, hey, this team, if you put the quarterback in on fourth down and then drop him back like he's going to punt, they can't get the people off the field in time, and it'll get a
there you go,
like that kind of thing, and they'll get a too many men on the field penalty, and you'll move the chains. Like that may be something that he could help, you know, in that type of capacity. I don't know what else I really.
But in a nutshell, don't you guys think it's okay to look back at some of it fondly and embrace it for two reasons? And two reasons only is why it's happening. A, he kept his mouth shut, didn't burn any bridges, and kept his legacy intact by not saying anything negative about Auburn like some other coaches have. And secondly, we romanticize it more because we're in the suck tax era.
Yeah. Yeah. We're paying a lot of those. Brad has a good point or a good question. If Freeze had gone 6-6, 7-5, and 8-4, how would we talk about Gus? The same, different, or better or worse?
If Freeze in that – okay, but in that three-year span, Freeze would have never played for a national title or been in the position to be in the college football playoff with the SEC championship game looming. So you can't just take that in a vacuum. You have to take the whole body work.
I don't think what he's saying there is, do you think you're talking about Hugh Freeze being better than Gus? I think what you're saying is, are we talking positive now about Gus more so because of the failures that have been?
Yes.
So if Freeze had just gone 8-4 and he's going into year four with a lot of momentum and this happens, do you think people are still fired up about Gus being around or not? I think that's what Brad's trying to say.
Probably not as much, but I still don't think he did anything to have people shun him because he handled it the right way. He handled it with class. He got removed as the head coach, and he didn't act like a you know what about it, like other coaches have. And to Freeze's credit to this point, he shut up and hasn't acted like a jerk about it either. So no. Credit to him. And he may be one that 5 years from now, you know, we don't look back on his tenure fondly. But if he comes back around, they're like, you know, time heals all wounds. Let's go. He didn't go out the door as negatively, you know. He didn't as some others did. He didn't drive away.
No doubt. Zach, you got a card of the day?
If we had an interview of Freeze like 5 years from now, do you think he'd still be like, man, we were just so close, though?
He better not say it. At some point, his legacy and the way people viewed him would be so much more positive. He would just go, you know what? I kept saying that we were so close, and look back on it now. That was excuse. That was dumb for me to say we weren't. You know, own it. If he owned it, and sometimes time and perspective can allow you to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that.
I'll go with the most underrated player of the Gus Malzahn era.
Okay.
Noah Igbinoghene, first-round draft pick. Oh, nobody talks about him.
Yep.
Noah.
And he's a corner.
He's a wide receiver.
Was a wide receiver, changed positions. His long arms is like, he kind of looked like a corner. And then he was a first-round draft pick. Which
and didn't wasn't he the second first-round draft pick to go in that draft from Auburn that year? Didn't Auburn have two?
We had two. Derek Brown, I think, in him, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I guess that would have been the Derek.
Yeah. That's pretty sweet. That was the COVID draft, I think, where we were just so dying for anything sports that we watched that with. It was exciting because it was sports.
New jersey number this year in Seattle, too.
Zach, you want to do a card show?
A card show like where people go and vend, or like a card show, like a podcast?
I think just on a regular card show, because there is a card show coming up, right?
There is. The Auburn card show. It's going to be electric. If you want card content, let's talk cards.
That's right. Show.
Yeah.
There you go.
Gus did all.
Hey, I tell you what. That's one thing we could look forward to every year.
Destroyed them.
We were going to put it on their A. Arkansas was going to get it every single year.
Yep.
At one point in time, like, there would be times where you're like, okay, like, let's don't run all the trick plays. Like, let's save some, you know, for others.
Don't you feel like, though, also a majority of the time he beat who he was supposed to beat? The teams that Auburn were favored against, the lower SEC tier teams, he beat.
I think,
for yeah, I mean,
Kentucky ain't coming into Jordan Heron beat. Yeah, Kentucky ain't coming in.
Supposed to beat, we'll be fine again.
And he did. I mean, every once in a while, Mississippi State slipped up and beat him, but he, you know, and then he would win a couple games. His biggest problem is he couldn't beat LSU and Baton Rouge, and he struggled against Georgia. I mean, he beat Alabama pretty consistently as much as anybody else did. So, but he beat the teams he should have beat. Like I said, Kentucky doesn't roll into Jordan Hare and beat him 10-3.
Favorite Yeah. Wow. Hold on really quick. Farm data 1689. Hey, Brad, instead of the panel trying to interpret your chats, how about logging in?
Ooh. There it is.
Oh,
there it is.
To quote Sammy Davis, ouch, babe.
Ouch, babe.
Wow.
Very ouch.
Ouch, good. Cat.
What was your favorite Gus Malzahn moment to wrap this thing up, non-2013? You can't use
anything. Thank you, Farm Data. Thank you.
Thank you, Farm Data.
Favorite? Can't use 2013?
No,
at all.
No 2013.
Okay. Probably 2019 Iron Bowl. That might be my favorite college football game ever.
2017 Georgia when he beat the dog mess out of him. Remember that?
Yep.
When Kerryon busted that screen,
that was a beautiful play. That was Picasso-esque when he had them all going one direction and threw the throwback screen.
I think this is true. I think this is true because Kirby said it was true, right? Him saying, "I'll see y'all in 2 weeks."
Total baller move
is the most to Georgia after knowing he had to go play Alabama to get to play Georgia again. We'll see y'all in 2 weeks and called a shot. I think that was probably my favorite thing. If that's true, which I think it is because Kirby said it was.
2019 Iron Bowl was the most emotional I've ever been after a football game.
Yeah.
I think a lot of – like we feel like as a community there's a lot of stuff going on at that point that was all negative. Like we really needed that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean either the 2017 ones, obviously, Georgia or Bama.
Yeah. Least the last favorite. Time we beat Georgia was 2017.
Yeah.
Now do least favorite.
The Cox Cat.
That's got to be
the least favorite.
Mine's the Clemson game in 2016.
Yeah. That's frustrating. Yeah.
The multiple quarterbacks and the
– Oh, no, no.
The wing.
It's A&M, right?
Single wing.
A&M, the butt the – not butt fumble, but we ran into the guy. Marshall fumbled on the two or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
That A&M game is really like.
Do you want to know, in my opinion, besides the Georgia game, the most flawless game plan? Go back and watch the 2014 LSU game.
Oh, God. We destroyed them.
That was
yeah,
a masterpiece.
We beat them like 40-something to 7.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Like, yeah. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
That Alabama game plan that year was pretty good.
Yeah.
What about just
throw it deep to Sammy and Duke?
Is this 2014 Ole Miss?
That was
LeVon Treadwell broke his leg an inch.
That was when Auburn was into the college football playoff, right? First, the very first college football playoff rankings came out, and Auburn was number 2.
That was an electric game.
I don't think that's when that was. I think that happened later.
What's that?
Because I think right after we were 2.
We lost to Mississippi State
State because they were 1, right?
So maybe a week later? It was close. They were within very close.
Because Ole Miss was 4, I think. Had we already beaten Ole Miss, and so it was a quality loss, so they didn't care? Is that why Ole Miss was 4?
I don't know. I just thought that after we beat Ole Miss was the first time the college football playoff came out. In 2014, we were ranked.
Yeah.
So we had lost to Mississippi State before we played Ole Miss, and we played Ole Miss 2 weeks after Mississippi State. So you lost to Mississippi State, you thumped South Carolina,
Ole Miss.
You bounced back against Ole Miss, who was number 4.
Okay.
And then you had the Texas A&M game.
So we were ranked, though, after the Ole Miss game. The poll came out,
yeah.
I didn't realize we lost to Dak Prescott before Ole Miss. So, yeah, I guess we
did. That game was so fluky because, you know, you had those those two freak turnovers to start the game, and then remember the bottom fell out. Like, it just rained, and Nick Marshall could not throw a ball in the rain. Like, he can't do it. He can't.
Well, then we were getting momentum, and then we would just turn it over. Like, the kick we were returning. We had two fumbles on kick returns, I think.
And we came out and threw a bomb to Sammy Coates, and he got a bogus to start the second half, maybe. And he got a bogus offensive pass interference call.
That's right.
Yeah.
I was at that game in their press box, and like all their like student media was just like jumping up and down the whole time. I'm like, I've never seen anything like this. Never seen anything like this.
Good times. Christian has no idea what we're talking about right now.
No, you know what? I like remember things, but not the same way you do. And I'm enjoying this. I'm sitting back while being on camera, just enjoying being a fan. So I'm good. I'm good. I'm enjoying every second of it.
2014 season, like somehow, like there were plenty of highs there, but man, like because of what was at stake, it hurt. God, it hurt.
Yeah, it did. Well, we had just gone to the national championship, and we were so close. And
we
then
brought so much back.
Brought
we,
so much
we
back.
We added Duke, like, man. Oh.
And Duke was nasty. He's still one of my favorite players. I don't care what anybody says. That dude was a dog.
Would you say that year is the last year?
What's that?
Would you say 2014 is the last year you really felt like you were, like, just so close? Like, I hate to say that, use that term, but like, is that the last
in 2017 we were there, and then we brought so much back in 2018, and then just
but 2017 was weird to me because we got embarrassed by Clemson, and then I think we also got embarrassed. Did we get embarrassed by LSU that year too?
Didn't we blow like a 17-0 lead against LSU? And then
yes,
Gus Malzahn had the gall, and he ended up being right, had the gall to go out in the post game and was like, guys, it's fine. If we went out, we're in the college football playoff.
I remember that.
Oh.
No, that was the game. That was the game that they jumped. They had LSU had a big lead on us, but we never quit and came back and made it a game in Baton Rouge. In 2013.
Oh, God, yeah, we had the big lead in Baton Rouge.
We were up 17-0, I think.
Will Hastings caught a touchdown.
Oh, you're talking about the college football playoff year 17 where we would. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I got you. And then 13, too.
And we're all melting down, and Gus just in typical Gus fashion. I'll remember that post game for forever. He's just like, we're fine. We control our own destiny. And we're like, what? You just let this slip away, are you kidding? And then we did win out, and we beat the number one team in like two times in 3 weeks. It was incredible. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay, all right.
He was right. Kind of.
And then Kerryon got hurt.
I remember that game because I think – who was it? Was it Brian Matthews? He was so mad from on three. He charted, and we ran the ball on first down for like the entire second half. And we would gain less than 2 yards every single time. Like, we ran it on first down, and he charted that whole thing. Like,
I remember that.
How many times? He's like, this is a disaster. This was a disaster. Look at this.
Yes. Oh, man.
I was at Disney World at that point for that game. I was listening on the radio. I never will forget it. And I was fired up, and then, it all came crashing down. Fun times, fun memories. Times.
We went 53 minutes tonight.
Incredible. Guys, thank y'all for joining in the chat. Christian, thank you for being here. Dap, Zach, everybody. We're going to be back again Thursday night. We may be spinning the wheel again. We'll see what happens.
Are we doing anything tomorrow night for the soccer game?
No, I don't think so. How about the old red card got overturned?
That's yes, it did.
Let's go. I didn't know you could do that.
I
didn't even know you could do that.
I didn't either.
Trump made a phone call.
There was a precedent. Ronaldo, he still has to sit out a game in international competition. It just won't be the World Cup. Isn't that beautiful? It'll be some friendly against Uruguay.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's even better.
It is.
That's even better.
I saw something that's like, oh, Europeans are in trouble. Americans are caring enough to start getting corruption calls in FIFA.
That's right. There you go.
We start caring about soccer, the rest of the
world.
Forget about it. That's right.
Legitimately.
When guys like Allen Iverson or Kobe Bryant start playing soccer from America, like, just shut the lights out. Like, we're gonna start kicking.
Yeah, when Larry Fitzgerald's like, all right, I'm not going to catch passes anymore. I'm going to focus on kicking a soccer ball. It's done.
Yeah. Or I'm going to be a goalie.
Yeah, imagine Megatron.
No one will ever score.
Megatron is a goalie. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Guys, y'all take care. We're going to get out of here, and we'll talk again very, very soon.
Peace.
Hold on. I promise. We're leaving.
Hit the button.